Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
We're going to go a great distance in a manner of speaking. But in order to go a great distance, in order to understand the things that we're here to understand, we have to start really right where we are. We have to start with what we are. And this is sometimes the most difficult thing that can happen for a person who is in some way or another an aspirant to a higher life. Call that what you will, a life in God, a life in the divine, a life of peace, a life of kindness, a life of harmlessness. The words don't matter so much to me. What matters, and I hope to you, is that if we're going to start where we are, we have to start with this honesty about ourselves, which is a fairly rare commodity in these days of imagery and glamour and the way in which we want to be seen by others and profess to be something that we're quite often the opposite of. So I want to begin by saying to you, this world that we're in is a world being filled with increasing conflict. There's just no question about it. And while we may think to ourselves that we're not a part of this increasing conflict, in one respect, there's no escaping being a part of the planetary because of our personal lives and the way that they're founded and what they're founded in and what we do day to day as individuals, the things that we pursue. And the question is there any way in which we as individuals, first as individuals, can become something that is not a continuation of this suffering, so that by our own work, we begin to be different kinds of human beings? This is nothing, nothing. Truth means nothing. I don't care what you've read or who you've been hit on the forehead with by or whatever it is that happens to people who seek after these things. If we're not different kinds of human beings, it's worthless. And that means that we have to work at something. And part of our work and what we're going to look at as we go through the material for this talk is what's the real source of all this conflict? What generates it? What keeps us from being simply, truly kind? I'm not talking about how many of you can muster up niceness for a couple days in a row. Let me see hands. I mean, we've got that part down. You know, you give me what I want, I smile at you, and I give you what you want, and that whole thing holds together only as long as we can pretend what we've been pretending. And I'll get this point out right away. The proof that we're pretending is that it turns into a punishment. First, a punishment for ourselves because we start to resent and regret having to keep this thing going, and then God help anybody that has to push us past the point where we can't be nice anymore. And the initial point here is that we can't change our lives without changing the purpose of our lives. It's impossible. See, we're trying to change the purpose in order to change our lives. The purpose has to be changed. And the evidence of the need for a change in the purpose of our lives is evident in all the conflict that accompanies 6 billion individual purposes running into each other. Because where you have purpose, you have plan. Where you have plan and you have two people with different plans, even if they say they're about love, you get people who hate one another. You get people who collide. And because of the conflict and the inherent pain in it and all of these conflicting purposes that, by the way, everyone is selling. I don't know if you've noticed this. Everybody's selling purposes today. And I'm suggesting to you that if you have to buy a purpose, meaning if you have to go outside of yourself to find one, you found the wrong thing. And that's what we're talking about today. What possible good could any purpose be that doesn't unfold from the understanding of our own heart? Because if it doesn't, it means it's a surreptitious purpose. It's an addition. It's an image. It's a condition that the world has said the purpose will give you this pleasure, therefore this peace, pursue it and you'll be a happy human being. And the evidence that we pursue it and don't become happy human beings is how unhappy we are trying to protect the things that we said would please us. So if we're going to do what we can do here, everybody take a deep breath. I'll do that several times, by the way, because I know what happens while I'm talking. we're going to have to do something that no one else essentially has done. We're going to learn about things within ourselves, about the world at large, and about something deeper and more beautiful. And then we're going to work to employ it. So I'm going to start with what I said was a simple, rather obvious question. So obvious that billions miss it. How many of you have ever just physically fallen down in life, hands? All of us have fallen down. You say, what a silly question. What direction did you fall in? Ah. So when we fall down. Okay, I'm with you. Now, why do we fall down?
Gravity.
Gravity. A physicist. Or at least someone who graduated sixth grade biology or whatever. That's right, gravity. We fall down because the force of gravity pulls us down. Now, why am I asking simple questions like this? Because now I'm going to ask a question that's not so simple, and one that you must not give yourself a simple answer to. How many of you have ever fallen down in a relationship? Hands. How many of you ever fell down when someone cut you off on the freeway? Fell down when some economic news came at work? Fell down when a thought revisited you about what mother or father didn't say or what was taken from you by someone who promised you something and gave you another? Someone's got their hand up the whole time I'm talking. Why do we have to fall down?
So we can get up.
Oh, see, I asked you, I said, when we fall down physically, gravity pulls us down. Why when something happens? Why when the unwanted moment comes? Why when the disturbance is there? Why when something comes in and pushes whatever it is that it pushes? Why does the human being fall down into the negative state? See, the beauty of what we're going to do today, and it is beautiful, so I hope that you'll all at least try to see it, even if you start to feel a little uncomfortable in the light we're going to bring in. The reason we fall down into negativity is because that's the best we know to do at the moment. Period. It's mechanical. It's a default action. It's a default action. And I want you to think about that for a minute, because what we're saying is that when something happens and we get hurt, the world doesn't turn to the left when it's supposed to go to the right, or whatever the example may be, that at the split second that that takes place, this conflict that occurs causes us literally to descend. And we descend into what we're going to call, for the purposes of this talk, the most common character present. The most common character, meaning the majority character of ourselves. Now, this is tough because I can already see somebody going, a majority character of me isn't that, but you're that right now while I'm saying it. How many of you can see that? You said, I don't do that. I told my wife, we have wild turkeys where I live. And all I have to do is walk out the door, close it, and they go, and all you have to do is go, boo, and they go, like this, big toms. Just make any noise. And so I went outside to get something. I closed the door and two toms, like that. And I started, I actually felt a wave come up. And I started to say, why do you have to, as I say, was the question, why do you have to be like that? Aren't I the turkey? Aren't I? If at the moment of the disturbance, a negative state determines my action and my behavior, you tell me the difference between me and the turkey. See, this is powerful. I'm telling you, it's not very flattering. Because none of us think of ourselves as being as elemental as a creature that can't do anything other than respond to a stimulus. But the fact remains that every time a certain event takes place in our life, whatever it is, our response is to succumb, yield to the gravity in ourselves that pulls us down to the lowest part of ourselves, which is what? That which we express in terms of being negative, depressed, angry, frightened. Because those states, when they appear, they will convince us that it is our choice to be that way. But no one chooses to compromise themselves or, more essentially, to limit themselves, which every negative state has inherent in its existence. How many of you with me? Okay, it's good to breathe. It's good to move around a little bit. Some of you, your face hasn't moved once since I started talking. I do want to know that you're alive. Now, the next thing, and if we've understood this, which we must, that in the moment in which we respond from what we're just going to call a default character. That part of us that responds with the most immediate reaction that's generally, if not totally, some kind of negative reaction. Why negative, by the way? Because it is a reaction born out of resistance. All forms of resistance are negative in their origin. So if I resist a moment, it means that something negative has come up and it's pushing it away. It doesn't want it. Then comes the corresponding states, emotional states and thoughts that support the reason that I, in quotes, am doing that. But I'll ask you, am I doing that? Or is there something that was stirred in me in that moment that is doing that? And then I say I to it. You know the answer, don't you? That's important. All right. Must it be like this? Must it be like this? See, we'll say, please no, or no, it must not be like this. But how many of us have taken our lives and used them for the purpose of understanding this? So that when we walk into the bookstore, when we go to get our coffee at Starbucks, and they forget to put the whipped cream in our mocha. Well, you can name what you think is important. How many of us know how to use those moments instead of that default character that descends into some form of darkness, not being evil darkness, just dark as being unenlightened, unexamined, unknown, and responding from that? Must it be like that? And the answer unequivocally is no, it need not be like that. No, no, no. Now, in order to change ourselves, because that's what we're talking about, we are not talking about changing the person that you live with. How many of you are disappointed already? We're not talking about changing the government. We're not talking about changing anything outside of ourselves. Because if we can change that, if we can change within ourselves what has made the world the way that it is, then there is a way in which the world can become a different place because the right order has been assumed. The right order has been taken on. The responsibility for the order has been assumed by what is right in us and that can do that. So take a deep breath because we're going to make another phase here. We're going to talk about the extraordinary life, the extraordinary life, because the extraordinary life is actually a supernatural life. It is actually a supernatural life. And don't get hung up on words. I'm a writer, as some of you know, and my mind is always juggling words and looking at relationships between them. And so when I say the extraordinary life is the supernatural life, I'm not saying to you that you need a kettle and a deal and, you know, boil, toil and trouble. I'm talking about the fact that there is the possibility in our lives of not falling down, but falling up. Not falling down, but falling up. Just take a breath and think for a second. He hurt me. And I don't fall down into hating him. I got the bad news about my body. I'm going to die. By the way, we all are, in case you don't want to know it. And I don't fall down. I fall up. Have you ever wake up on the wrong side of bed? Ever fall out of bed? You understand what I'm saying? And I don't fall down, I fall up. What a world. What a life. If every day a person who, by the way, how many of you know, and maybe you don't, that's part of our problem. Did you know that you fall down, 15,000 times a day? How many of you know that? See, so I don't see many hands now. Not me. And you just fell. Imagine being able to fall up. Well, that's what we're going to do. Now, I'm going to tell you a story. And I have to tell you that I've told a lot of stories in my talks over the years. Can't tell you how many stories I tell. I love stories because they allow us to examine things that are otherwise pretty much impossible to talk about. Parables, as you will. And the story that I'm going to tell you in our meeting now is a story that I wish somehow all of you could take home with you. I mean, I know you will because you're here. But I mean, I wish that there were a way for you to, even if you don't understand it, and I better put that in right away. This is, in one respect, a very simple story, as all stories should be. But the root of this story The purpose of this story goes back to the very beginning of time. And it addresses questions that most of us, if we've been aspirants, seeking it all in our lives for a relationship with God, with truth, it goes right to the heart of so many questions that we have about all of this nonsense, this highly authoritarian, religious doctrine and ideology that has turned people away from the possibility of discovering the purpose of their life. So this story has quite a bit of information in it. So listen to it. Not long story, but packed with certain principles. So here we go. Take a deep breath and we'll go into our story. Here's a dozen men and women, and they're being led up a very high, steep mountain pass. You've all seen those. And in front of them and behind them, there are two people, and they're in robes, and they're holding these torches, and it's a dark, twisted path going up the mountain. And the people who are going up the mountain, they have their hands, one hand on the shoulder of the person in front of them, and they're all following the person who, in the front, has his hand on the person who's leading them up, who isn't blindfolded. And they make their way up a rather treacherous and steep path till they reach a certain point at the top of a hill that's flat. And then the person leading them up says, "All right, remove your blindfolds." And the aspirants take off their blindfolds, and they look around. And it's pretty stunning, so much to see at first glance, because they're right on the top of a mount high up in the air, and the thing maybe is only, we're going to say, an eighth of a mile by an eighth of a mile at the top, flat, and then it's a sharp drop-off from the on the other side from where they came up, a very sharp drop-off, and right on the edge of that drop-off is situated a temple of a sort, a not too fancy building, stone, big oak doors in the front, a pair of them, and the teacher looks at the students, and he says, "Okay, let's all go in now." And so they walk in and they're looking around, and it's rough, it's hewn wood, stone floor. And on the far side, there's a couple windows. This is right on the side where the sheer drop off of the cliff is, because the building's back right up to that. And there's also a one door there, right? You can tell just by looking at that door can't go anywhere. But you're not thinking about all that, because for one thing, you're trying to look like you really know what you're doing. Put yourself, by the way, you're all, in any story, you are all the characters, okay? So the teacher says, "I want to welcome all of you. You're here because you asked and have been granted the boon of receiving a very advanced lesson in your spiritual life." He said, "And it's good that you've asked, because it's time, there always comes a time when a person has to put down knowledge and begin to act. They need to do what they've been learning all of the years that they've been learning. And this is no exception." He said, "And so before I tell you the initiation process that you've agreed to, I want to refresh your memory. I want to go over some ideas with you." And he says, "First," now this is where you really need to come into the talk. He said, "First of all," he said, falling itself is built into our physical being. Falling is built into our physical being. He said, "You can't see it necessarily, but by the fact that you're in a body, that there is a continual process by the fact of matter." Because if you understand, matter is always under the laws of gravity. You can understand that, can't you? So he said, "There is a certain truth that falling itself is built into our physical being. Matter is always descending according to the law of gravity." He said, "However," he said, "whatever falls is itself a part of an invisible opposing force that is always rising." Whatever falls itself is a part of what is always rising, as all great forces are opposites. One doesn't exist without the other. One can't see this invisible rising force because it's invisible. Just as one can't see the gravity that's pulling on the body, it's invisible. We have the evidence of this physical gravity, don't we? Unless we want to spend a lot of money, which I urge you not to. He says, "So with this idea in mind," he says, "I want you to understand that this opposing force, this rising force that is always present," he said, it is a very distinct power which requires, in order for it to be active, a third force. And the third force that this rising force requires, we can call a number of things." He said, "We could call it love. We could call it the light. But the fact is, he said, that this third force that we call love or light, it is always present, this third force, but it isn't always active. And the reason it is always isn't active is because it's only active when a person calls upon it. The only time that the rising force becomes evident is when an individual lives from and accesses this other force, a reconciling force, that allows the person to understand that. Now, I'll take a moment here because I don't want to lose you. This is, in some respects, physics, but it is truly spiritual in that every one of you, whether you see it now or you'll see it later, is the embodiment of this. There's no time when I'm talking to you that the principles I'm describing have come to you from out of a book. You may, but not in this instance, for what we're going to talk about, find this in a book. But you are the book. You're the book. And we are meant, each and every one of us, to see these things, understand them directly, not with anyone's help. And so this part of this talk, the story where the teacher says, look, by law, this everything physical is falling, but wherever something's falling, there is an invisible opposing force, a rising force. But we don't rise. We talked about that. We don't rise when we fall. Why don't we rise when we fall? Why does gravity have its activity both on our body and, more importantly, on our spirit, on our soul? The question is answered when a person recognizes that, let's see. I'll ask you. How many of you ever started to fall and grabbed onto something that looked like a life raft but turned out to be an anchor? That's right. When I start to fall, I grab onto the first thing that appears. And in this instance, it's usually anger or self-loathing. How many of you love the old self-loathing anchor? You idiot, you, and you're by yourself. You're talking, you stupid. What's wrong with you? Yada, yada, yada. Tearing into yourself. Now, let me ask a question. Is tearing into yourself an ascending force or okay, I don't need to go further with that, do I? And by the way, why is it a descending force? What is it about the activity when you tear into yourself or hate something or get angry at someone? Why is that part of a descending force and a gravity downward? Listen, because in that moment, your nature, your present nature, grabs onto thought. It grabs onto matter. It grabs onto your past. It grabs onto experience. It grabs onto what was. And everything that it grabs is an image. Everything that it grabs is a form of thought. And all thought, all images, even though they're invisible to us, in themselves are a form of matter. So that I try to lift myself by gathering and grabbing what turns out to be weight. But I don't see it as weight. Why don't I see it as weight? Because the me that grabs it doesn't know the difference between up and down. Hands, how many see what I'm talking about? It's necessary. It's healthy. It would actually be good for you to raise your hands. Some of you said, I'm not raising my hand. Gravity. Now, this is where our part comes into it. This is where you and I have the possibility to turn this potential third force, love, light, that which actualizes, not a word I use much, but it's good in this instance, that which actualizes the rising force, as opposed to, by default, our being identified with that which drags us down. And by the way, everyone else around us. Have you not noticed that? Someone's headed, ever see, how many of you know people headed down? Any given day. You walk into Starbucks, you want to see people headed down. People down, they're down, they're down. Why are they down? Because life is thwarting me. People are, it's not going the way it's supposed to go. And as they're going down, you look at them. And guess which direction you go in when you look at someone who's going down? Down. Why? Because the gravity of their nature stirs a similar response inside of you. You get negative, which is always, think about this. How many of you get negative when people are negative? Is that an ascending force or a descending force? Which way is negativity going? Down. Under whose law? Gravity. All right. This is where our part comes in. We must learn what it means. We must learn to understand what it means to call upon. And we'll describe exactly what this means when we feel ourselves falling, to be able to call upon this light, this love, as opposed to calling upon fear or a negative state. So the teacher explains to the group of students, and he says to the students, okay, how many of you think you understand? How many think you understand a little bit? Anybody? You're in the room, man. This is it. This is it. Look, this is it. There's no, I mean, I'm waiting for something.
It's happening while I'm talking to you. See, it's never not happening. The whole idea of death, of resurrection, of rebirth, of the light, of truth, it's not something that happened 2,000 or 5,000 years ago or whatever your particular religious ideology is. It's now. And you're the book. So the teacher says, how many of you think you understand? And a few hands go up. You may be smarter than you think. He says, okay then. And he walks over to the door leading out into nowhere. He says, who's first? And they do just what you do. They look around at each other. They look at me. You mean to step out the door that leads to the 5,000 foot drop? And one of the students, me, I'll do it. I'm there. I got it. How many ever thought you said, I got it? I got it. He walks over to the door. Now he's underneath. He's very cool and calm, but his heart, and he looks at the teacher. He looks back at the group. No problem. Steps out. Just falls like a rock. And you hear him going, no, like that. And all the students go, oh, my God. Teacher says, don't worry. And they say, how can you say not worry? And he said, turn around. And the student who fell out the door and turned around, he was now back in the room at the end of the line of the other students. This is spiritual truth, by the way. If your heart's sincere, nothing can happen to you other than learning the truth. Nothing bad can happen to you. All things good come to those for whom the good is all things. Nothing bad can happen to someone who is willing to learn the truth, even if it costs them what they think is their life in that moment. Nothing bad can happen. Teacher looked around the group. He said, who's next? And just like in this room, no hands. Not a single one grows up. That's okay. You know why? Because in this life, no matter what you do, you have to walk through the door. It's not an option. Haven't you noticed that? Now, people would like it to be an option, which is why they think if they get enough money, enough power, enough possessions, enough authority, they can lock themselves into a room someplace with enough people that say, oh, Alibaba, you're the be all end all. And then I don't have any doors to walk through, except for one. The first time that one of the people that I have under my power says you're not. And then all of a sudden, then all your power crumbles. How many of you know what it's like to have one person, one expression on a face, have the door open, you walk out, and you go, no, you fall down. One little thing. See, our attitude is that that's not supposed to happen to us. Isn't that? I mean, if you examine your purpose in life, isn't it so that all doors lead to a bigger room? You understand the analogy? That's not a door where the floor falls out from underneath me, but every door is supposed to open up into a larger as part of my estate where nothing disturbs me. And I have enough money to get rid of anybody that even comes close to bugging me. In this life, there's no option. We are living right now, each and every one of us, if we could see it. We're at the threshold of the door. We're through the door and we're experiencing what happens outside the door all at once, every moment of our lives. No exception to that. And just as a sidebar, think for a second what happens when, and I promise you it will if you're sincere in your wish to awaken. Think what happens to an individual who lives like that. Think they're ever bored? Think they ever have hatred go through them up towards someone or something? You think they're ever worried about what's going to become of them?
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
You know, the only reason a person worries about what's going to become of them is because they're trying to figure out how to stay away from that door where the unknown happens to them. And this life is the unknown. The whole thing is unknown. It's one great threshold into a space in which one is always falling and presently, because of our nature, continuing to go down as opposed to understanding what makes it possible for us to fall up. Say it to yourself, fall up.
Fall up.
How can you fall up? I want to fall up. In order to fall up, we have to understand for ourselves what it means to fall up, which is what this whole time, the extraordinary life, that supernatural, if you will, because it is supernatural. Nothing falls up, does it? Does anybody know anything that falls up? Nothing falls up. You can. Something and you can. So now we're going to talk about what does it take to fall up. Another deep breath. We're about halfway through. What does it mean to go up? What does it mean to go up? How do you think of the Jeffersons? I'm moving on up. You know, that's what we think. When we think about going up, we think of moving up. I'm moving to the east side. If you never saw the Jeffersons, a very cute, cold, old sitcom about a person who gets his, I finally got a piece of the pie. How many of you got a piece of the pie? I finally made it, and I'm moving on up. Now, how many of you ever moved up only to realize that whatever it was that you moved up into had moved into you? And not only had it moved into you, but you didn't own it, now it owned you. Happens a lot, all the time. Could be the simplest thing. So moving up has nothing to do with this kind of linear, meaning in time, becoming someone who isn't susceptible to disturbances. Because that's what we think of moving up. More power, more possessions, whatever it is. That's what we think moving up is. That is not what moving up is. I'm going to give you another definition altogether of what moving up means. First, the real moving up is that which occurs when within ourselves we are able to, I'm going to use two words, transcend and integrate. Don't get lost. Be able to transcend and integrate ourselves so that what pulls us down no longer can. Moving up. Essentially, finding within ourselves that which is not susceptible to what we'll call spiritual gravity, the force of darkness. That's what spiritual gravity is, the force of darkness. Something inside of us that is capable of living beyond the influence of that which automatically, presently pulls us down when the event goes the way we don't want it to go. And this process by which a person begins to understand this way in which they actually move up requires understanding that, because so many of us every day are still trying to move up. We still think there's going to be some value in a better position in life. I'm not naysaying excellence in your workplace. By all means, be the most excellent human being you can be. But I am saying that you need to examine inside of yourself on a momentary basis, if not permanently. My purpose in life, unseen, is to continue to become something whereby somehow I'll escape this thing that's dragging at me. This feeling like I'm not enough, that I'm inadequate, that I was a bad this or a bad that, and one day I won't be. And we need to look at this because that set of purposes that's derived from that nature is actually, it seems like light, but it's not an act of light. It's an act of imagination inside of a human being that's calling upon all of the images it no longer wishes to be or partake in. So most of our purposes are actually resistance driven. Can some of you see it? All right, good. In order to move up, we have to understand, number one, and I said this, that I guess I don't know much about up. How many ever thought you're going up and found yourself down? You understand the question. This is a beautiful point because there's something inside of us knows what up is. No problem. I got up nailed. Just try to pull me down. I'll show you up. All right. In order to understand up, we need to understand a whole new approach to it. And here's the idea. The idea of up is that integration is elevation. Integration is elevation. Now, what on earth does that mean? Integration is elevation. First of all, every one of us has had some experience of this, but not in these words. How many of you ever went through a crisis? Raise your hands. Welcome to planet Earth. You wind up the doll, it falls down. Human being.
Integration is elevation. In a crisis, all of us have realized at some point that our lives as they were could no longer go on being what they had been. Essentially, I call a crisis a close encounter of the truthful kind, where what I've been telling myself I am and what I have runs into the fact that I'm not and I won't. Basically. Now, who wins? The man or woman who sits and hates and fights and struggles, who are in the hands of gravity, or the person who, not because of any goodness in us necessarily, by the way, finally fights every last you have and then finally just let it go. That's it. I'm done. I'm dead. You ever say to yourself, I'm dead? I don't know the way out. Life's over. Adios. And we're not dramatic, are we? In that split second, when a person lets go, what is it that they've really let go of? Have they let go of what it was they wanted? Or have they let go of the nature inside of themselves that said it knew what up was? That's what was let go of. This wanting, this desireful nature that is determined that this that it is imagined is part of that which it calls up. And obviously that which is called up can't be up if, for going after it and hating what happens, I'm dragged down further and further and further and becoming addicted to whatever it is that I'm addicted to, including negativity, by the way. So, if that is the case, which it is, then the question becomes, in that moment, well, what happened if we actually finally let it go? Isn't it so that the part of me, now listen, take a deep breath, the part of me that thought I had to have this in order to be that, disappeared. And what was formerly divided is now not divided. Integration took place. And in the moment of that integration where I'm no longer divided up into who I have to be and what I have to get that, at the split second of that integration, am I going up or down? I'm going up. What's the proof of that? I'm a little nicer. I may have some humility for the first time in my life. I may understand why other people have been in the pain they've been in because I went through it myself and I can see the futility of that now. So compassion is born. And that you can see all true and great positive states relative to the spirit are connected to the integration of the individual when they can no longer hold together inside of themselves that which has kept them asunder, apart. And think about this. How many of you hate moments like that? It's a good laugh. We actually despise the moments that bring us to the point of integration. Because you're messing with my life. We don't think, so some of you, not me, I love it, not me, I'm spiritual. You better get over that quickly. You're messing with my life. Stop messing with me. I know what's right. I know up from down. Don't you dare leave me. Don't you dare take that away from me. Don't you dare put me in that position where I'm not certain what's going to happen. And every one of those moments is first received by us as a downward force, but unseen in those moments of that downward force is this accompanying upward, elevating force that comes about when the individual recognizes this has been brought together for them for the purpose of this integration of themselves. Now, we have to talk about how that integration takes place. Take a deep breath. Another deep breath. To understand this idea of integration is elevation, we have to understand a completely new approach to what light is. We have to have a new understanding of light if we want to understand this integration that turns into elevation. And why do we need a new understanding of light? Because, look, how many of you ever had a sofa in your house that sat there underneath the window where the sun came in for a year or so? How many, anybody have a sofa like that? It's a killer, isn't it? You know, buy these. Well, you don't have to. Trust me, you don't. But the sun acts on the material, doesn't it? And what does the sun do to the material? Fades it. Is there anything that material can do? Huh? No, don't put sunlight on me. I hate sunlight. I'm fading. Because sunlight in itself, and this is very deep if you'll go with me on it, sunlight in itself transforms whatever it touches. Even the simple light from the sun transforms what it touches. Nothing is touched by sunlight that isn't changed by it. Is it? All right. So does the light of awareness act on our essence. Just as sunlight transforms whatever it touches, so does the light of awareness, which is a form of that same light. Light is light. It has different levels, different scales. Light is light. Beautiful light. Beautiful light. The light of awareness transforms the essence that it touches. Now, what does that mean? It acts on our essence in the same way as sunlight. Now, listen, take a deep breath. Because it changes us according to its values. This is deep. Just like sunlight. Does sunlight go to the tree and go, would you like some light today? No, sunlight says, here I am. Here's this radiant. Here's this supernal energy. You must take it and you must use it because that's the order of things. Tree goes, in essence, doesn't say it, but takes it in. We get fruit. The light of awareness is an activity more certain than the sun. Because without the light of that awareness, without that intelligence that gave birth to that light that produced that sun, there wouldn't be the sun. So here in scale is this greater light. The light of awareness is greater than the light of the sun. It's a form of it. And when a person understands how the light of awareness, it transforms what it touches, that person starts to, okay, what does that mean exactly? All right. If I let this awareness, here, I got you. How many of you ever saw something about yourself that you wished you didn't see? Aha. Aha. Now think about that. That's in itself like a whole talk. Isn't it? How could, I'm sitting there and I'm talking to my wife or I'm doing my business and all of a sudden I see what? I see a little bit of, you know, like a, you ever see like a stain on your shirt? You know, you see this thing and you catch it, you see it. You see that you're selling yourself out. You see that someone's doing something that if you don't stop them from doing it, something bad's going to happen, but you need them in your life and you fill in the blanks and you see it. And what happens in the moment when you see it? That's it. Don't want to see it. Why? It's interfering. Now, how can light interfere with life? Can the sun interfere with life, or is it the root of it? It's the same thing when it comes to the light of higher awareness. It's not interfering with life, it's offering to integrate it. It's offering to integrate it, and it's actually, when I say offering, it's an offer because you don't have to. You don't have to. You can go through life as most human beings do, going, nope, I don't care what's happened to the world. I mean, I do when I'm with my friends and I'm having a cocktail. I'm as environmentally active as a person can be. And then I get in my Hummer. Which I hope none of you have. Don't you see how divided the mind is, and that when this rescuing kind of awareness comes, this light appears as it will appear inside of us, that in that split second, the proof that it has an action that we can't understand is that most of the time we can't stand its action. Think about it. See, I'm kind of trying to, you know, get you to open up a little bit because I'm talking about God's life in us. We don't think a purpose exists any higher than the one we've told ourselves is the right purpose. But here's this action, day in and day out, never not present. Potentialized, no, but never not present. In which a person gets a chance to see, I'm sitting in my office and I'm scared to death because I have to go make a presentation to a group of business people or whatever it is. And in the moment of that, the awareness of that fear produces in that person an opportunity to recognize that he's been there 50,000 times before and answered the fear with the same thing he answered before, which was go get a drink or pay somebody to applaud when he was done talking. I'm giving a rough metaphor. You understand what I'm saying. So this beautiful idea that this light of awareness changes us according to what it values. Now, this is where the spiritual rubber meets the road, because this is what we say. Well, that's beautiful, but I'm not going along unless I know what it is it values. That's what you see. You don't think you say that, but you do. Because in the moment where you see what's not right, what's inappropriate, meaning that which is part of this descending force, I don't want anything to do with it. I want to find a way, yes or no, to make what I've seen that isn't right into something right. Raise your hands. So I'll donate money. Do you understand? I'll do service at church. I'll become socially active. That's right. I'll do things that allow me to remain someone who sees that the root itself of what I'm doing is inappropriate to the goodness that life is showing me exists, but I'm not going to go about change because I don't know where it'll take me.
And I'm saying that we have to let go. That's all I write about. I have to let go. I say, you know what? Look, I'm terrified of not letting fear be my guide. I don't call it my guide when it shows up. I mean, I don't call it fear when it shows up, because fear never presents itself as being fear. It presents itself as a form of protection. This is what you have to do to keep what you have in place. And we don't want to examine the source of things. We want the outcome that it promises us to us, never seeing that the outcome is continually the same thing, which is that we're not rising, that we're not making this essential change. And that's what we're after, if you will, to use those words, is to understand that if I'm going to have this light, this reconciling force, allow me to fall up. And I want to bring it right back to that, the idea about falling up. Because in the moment of my fear, in the moment of my resentment, the moment of my regret, the moment which I'm carried back to the past with that pain, I don't care what it is, in the moment of the act of that gravity, everything depends upon what we do in that moment. Everything depends upon that. Because to simply acquiesce, meaning to simply allow ourselves to be turned over to that mechanical, habitual behavior that all of us know too well what it is, because that's what we do when we fall down. How many of you fall down and then kind of prove to yourself that you really don't want to fall down because of how much you hate being on the ground? You understand the idea? Oh, I hate this. Why am I here? Because you went. So this is the human condition. We never know how we got there. And then we look at our husband, you did that. I'm in this position because of you. No, sorry, ladies, gentlemen, you and I are where we are in this moment because of what we understand and what we love through that understanding. There is no other answer to that. And it's a beautiful answer because it takes out of ourselves that false responsibility of thinking to ourselves that, well, if I find someone new to blame, if I can always go back when things get rough, I can always go back to a rougher time. I'm going to give you a moment to think about that. You ever caught that? Things get really bad and then you think to yourself, well, it's not really that bad because it was worse last time. So I've made improvement. By the way, you don't learn by reliving experience. It's impossible. All attempts to relive experience are done on the part of a mind that revisits what was for the purpose of comparing itself. Then it says, well, I'll be better next time. The time when we change is when this descending, falling force is taking place, the fall of man, the fall of woman, when the fall is taking place, the opportunity for rising exists, and that rising is actualized by the reconciling, by this third force, this love, this light that we're talking about. And now our task, if we're going to change the way we live, is to begin to understand what it means to calling upon this unknowable, and I'm going to restress that because I've got only a few minutes left, that this unknowable thing that has come and said, see, and you go, wait, no, see what is. So let's go through this because I have five steps to falling up when you're just about to go down. Five steps to falling up when you're just about to go down. First and always, this is the first thing, you have to catch the downdraft. That means you have to stay awake. You have to come right now. Come awake. What does it mean? Come awake. Bring yourself in the room. Be aware of yourself in the room itself, of the cherry blossoms, of the trees, of your body, of your emotional state, the whole thing. To be awake is not to be apart from anything. It is to, as best you can, be aware of the whole moment. It is that awareness of that whole moment that allows a person to catch this tug of gravity. Negative states always come in the form of something pulling on you or pushing. It's a form of gravity. So the first thing always is to catch the downdraft, that negative state. And the beauty of this is that it isn't you that catches it. Oh, come away, because you got to hear this. See, the moment that the negative state comes in, whether it's caused by thought, addressing thought, or an actual movement of the cosmos, because that happens. Negative energies are not bad energies. They're just what they are. They become bad for us when we identify with them, turn them into images, and then keep them alive by ignorance inside of ourselves. The moment of that downdraft, the moment of that negative state, the fact that you can catch it, and you can, is a gift of the light. Why? Because the fact that there's this pulling down, there's an instantaneous rising. It is that moment of rising, of conflict. See, human beings, if they're not damaged beyond repair, actually feel a moment of conflict at the outset of a negative state.
But the negative state always steals that moment and causes the pain it's feeling to be blamed upon something it identifies with from its past. But that moment of uprising is not caused by the past. It's caused by this visiting light, by this love that makes that moment possible where a person can see that. So that's the first thing. Number two, after you catch the downcraft, catch that feeling of gravity. Do it right now, by the way. We're never not doing this. You consciously, you release what I call release the first response. Release first response. Now, what is first response? We've been talking about it. No! It's the part of us that instantaneously, now listen, gravitates to what it knows to do. It's the part of us that gravitates to what it knows to do. Now, have you ever thought of this? Did you know that a reaction is actually a memory? A reaction is a memory. We don't think of it in terms of intellectual memory because it belongs to the instinctual parts of ourselves. But a reaction is a memory. And so when we have a negative reaction, meaning that there's this jolt, that's a kind of memory. And it, by the way, the body actually gets addicted to the kind of chemicals that it produces through these negative reactions. But that's another story. Now, there's other kinds of memory. How many of you, when something goes bad, turns into happy hell? Eh, doesn't bother me. Where's the bottle? Do you understand? Happy hell. He or she who believes that at the moment when things go bad, they need only remember a social contrivance, something they should be as opposed to what's happening to them. That's just as bad as the reaction because it's what? It's caused by the same mind, only it's seizing hold at that moment of something it can identify with. I should be this kind of person, not that kind of person. What happens to a person who's two people? Can you say they get crazy? They do. There's conflict in someone who's two people. We're not meant to be two people. And the third kind of memory is a form of that in which a person tries to remember when things go bad, that God should be there for them. They try to remember what we'll call spiritual things, which if you can see it, and I'm not denigrating any of these things, I'm saying, can you see that what good is it for me to have to remember something to be? Because isn't that time? Isn't that me being divided and apart from that? So the question isn't now, what do I remember to be? The question is, what do I act on? What do I act on? And this is what we've been talking about the whole time. Because this action of being is the same action that we're talking about, where instead of trying to remember who to be, instead of getting caught up in that interior whirlwind, where we're trying to figure out how to escape this problem, we let ourselves, I'll use this, we become the light. We let the light into our lives. You use the word you want. We align ourselves, we give ourselves to that light. The awareness of the problem, not the self that's finding solutions for it in what it is named. Now, here's where the real hard part comes, and I'll tell you why. Because when you let this moment happen, and you, if you will, you reach for this light, and the moment you stay there and you inwardly, you let the light be there doing what it does, you have to bear that. That's conscious suffering. Conscious suffering. Because you see, if you can understand all we've talked about, that is a moment of rebirth. That is an actual moment of rebirth. Because who I was, meaning that which led up to the moment, has now found itself falling, but instead of going with the negativity that concludes it's necessary, I bring myself into the light that reveals the whole process. The integration begins by the action of the light. The integration begins. The light itself is doing what it does, and I'm passing. I have passed. I have to give myself up. And something new is born. We even talked about that, how when we come out of a crisis and have been unable to resolve the conflict for ourselves, we come out a different order of human being that went into it. So is it true every moment of our lives if we can do it. We can fall up. Because that's falling up. We said integration is elevation. And that elevation is the process of, if you will, I don't know if you're comfortable with the word, but I love it. It's a moment in which a person is continually being born again. Dying moment to moment, being born moment to moment. Why? Because they have allowed the light to do what the light is intended to do, which is to bring into them the possibility of this reconciliation of what was formerly divided, so that instead of going down, they move toward the divine. We will learn what it means to fall up. How many of you have an idea about falling up now? Learn to fall up. Don't you, if you catch yourself falling down, just remember yourself. And instead of going down, release the first response. Come wide awake, remember what you're here for, what you want, bear what you have to, and then watch as something brand new is born in you. You'll see it for yourself if you'll do it.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.